Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It's December the 9th, and it is the 8th night of Hanukkah, and we are in Parshas Bamidbar, page 738. We've counted all the Jews, and we discussed the transition from the Bechoros to the Levim, and now we're going to count the Levim themselves. Vayidaber, we're in Pasuk Yudal, verse 14. Vayidaber Hashem Moshe b'Mibar Sinai Lemar. Hashem spoke to Moshe in Mibar Sinai, saying, Pekodes b'nei Levi, count the b'nei Levi, levei savosam l'mishpechosam, according to their father's houses, to their families, kol zalchormi ben chodesh v'mala tifkedeim, every male from 30 days and up, you should count them. So from 1 month and up, you should count them. The Levim are going to be counted twice. Once from 1 month and up, and once from ages 30 to 50. So first we're going to count them 1 month and up. We are going to see some significant differences between the way they were counted this time and the way they'll be counted subsequently when they count only from 30 to 50. We're going to compare those two counts. Vayifkodos Moshe al pi Hashem. Moshe counted them according to the mouth of Hashem. Kasher tzuva, as he was commanded. Chazal tell us that this phrase, al pi Hashem, by the mouth of Hashem, is actually coming to solve a problem. Because Moshe Rabbeinu was told to count the Levim for 1 month and up. Until now, he was only counting adults, 20 years and up. Now, it's a month and up. The difference between adults at 20 years old and up and an infant or a child 1 month and up is that an adult can come to where the census is and you can count and you can have a central meeting place and people come, they submit their machatzis hashekel or whatever it is and you count them. But the 1 month and up children obviously cannot travel or come to wherever you're counting. You have to go to them. So Moshe Rabbeinu was forced to go to the individual tents of the Levim and count even the babies. So Moshe Rabbeinu said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how am I supposed to do this? I can't barge into people's tents. The babies are nursing babies. I can't just go into people's tents to count them. And I can't just be waiting for everybody to be available. You want me to count an accurate count to get every single person. So Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu, you go to the tents, stand outside the door, and then a bas kol will come forth and announce how many eligible men, meaning to be counted, boys, men, meaning eligible for this count, how many of them are in this tent, and then go to the next tent. So that is what happened. This count was different than the previous count, in that Hashem, it was al pi Hashem, by the mouth of Hashem. As Rashi tells us, Halach Moshe v'amar al Pesach Oel, Moshe went and stood at the opening of the tent, v'ashchina mekademes lefanav, and the Shechina, Hashem's divine presence, went in front of him, u'bas kol yodza min ha'oel, and a bas kol came out of the tent, v'omeres, and it said, kach v'kach tinokos yesh bo al hazeh, such and such are the amount of babies that are in this tent. That's why it says, al pi Hashem. So this was a special way of counting the Levim. The problem was created because Hashem expected 1 month old children to be counted. That created the problem. And therefore the problem needed to be solved. But the way that Hashem solved it is that the count was ended up being divine. That a bas kol itself announced the amount of the Levim. So this means that the count of the Levim by definition is necessarily more accurate than the count of the Bnei Yisrael. It doesn't mean there were any mistakes in Bnei Yisrael. It could be there were no mistakes. But as we know, whenever you have human beings doing anything, there can be mistakes. There's human error. So it's possible that there were no mistakes. It's very possible. But it's only possible there were no mistakes. It's also possible there were some mistakes. But with the Levim, it was done divinely, which means there couldn't be mistakes because Hashem doesn't make mistakes. So the Levium's count, therefore, is, when I say more accurate, I don't mean it had to be more accurate, because it could be there were no mistakes in the Bnei Yisrael's count, but the Levium's count was more likely to be 100% accurate. It had to be 100% accurate as opposed to the count of the Bnei Yisrael. So it's a different type of count. Pasuk Yud Ches, verse 8, I'm sorry, Pasuk Yud Zayin, verse 17. Vayu'ei Levi Levi Bishmosam. So these are the sons of Levi according to their names. Gershon, Ukahas, Umerari. Those are the three sons of Levi. We know, of course, Levi also had a daughter, Yocheved, but only the men are being counted here. And the three branches of Levium are Gershon, Kahas, and Merari. Ve'ele Shmos b'nei Gershon l'mishpachosam. These are the names of the sons of Gershon according to their families. Livni, Vishimi. So Gershon has two sons, Livni and Shimi. Uvnei Kahas l'mishpachosam. The sons of Kahas, according to their families, Amram v'Yitzhar, Chevron v'Uziel. So Kahas has four sons, Amram Yitzhar, Chevron, Uziel. This is a very important pasuk, because this tells us who were the immediate relatives of Moshe and Aaron, since Moshe and Aaron are the sons of Amram, as is Miriam, also daughter of Amram. So their uncles are Yitzhar, Chevron, and Uziel. That is important, because who is the famous or infamous son of Yitzhar? Korach is the infamous son of Yitzhar, Moshe and Aaron's first cousin. So this is an important pasuk. Uvinei Merari l'mishpachosam, and the sons of Merari according to their families, Machli u'Mushi, Machli and Mushi. Eilehem mishpachos ha-Levi l'beis avosam, these are the families of Levi according to their father's houses. Now we break them down. Gershon, Kahas, and Merari. We broke them down according to their sons. Two for Gershon, four for Kahas, two for Merari. Now we break it down a little bit more. Gershon, Mishpachas HaLivni, Mishpachas HaShimi, the family of Livni and Shimi, as we mentioned before. Elahem Mishpachos HaGershoni, these are the families of Gershon. Pekudehem B'mispar Kol Zachar, Miben Chodesh V'mala, their count of all the males, 1 month and up. Pekudehem, 7,500. That was the amount of the Gershon branch of the Levium. Mishpachos HaGershoni, Achari HaMishkan Yachanu Yama. The families of Gershon would, they camped behind the Mishkan on the west. So their camp was on the west side. That's where they were, the west side of the Mishkan. We're going to illustrate this soon. Unisive Samla Gershoni, and what about the Nasi of Gershon? We've had a Nasi, we've had a leader of each of the Shvatim, but in Levi, we're going to have a separate Nasi for each branch of the Levium. And the branch of Gershon, who was Gershon's Nasi? El Yosef Ben Lael, that's his name. Umishmeres B'nei Gershon Bo'amoid, and the job of the Bnei Gershon in the Ohel Moed, in the Mishkan, which means, what did they carry? Their job was to carry HaMishkan V'HaOhel. Mishkan here means the bottom layer of the roof of the Mishkan. Just like Sukkah, the word Sukkah really refers to the Schach of the Sukkah. The word Sukkah, we call, not just we call, the Torah calls the hut a sukkah, but it is the word sukkah comes from the material of the roof, the schach. That's the main part of the structure. So to hear, the main part of the Mishkan is the roof. It's the bottom layer that was, remember, there were three layers that roofed the Mishkan. The bottom one was called Mishkan. They carried that. It was a tapestry they carried. V'ha ohel. Ohel means tent, but here it means the second layer of the roof. Michsehu, and its covering, which is the third layer of the roof. So Bnei Gershon carried the three layers of roofs that were the tapestries that were over the Mishkan. What else did they carry? Umasach Pesach Oel Moed, and the curtain that was in the front of the Mishkan. Now this is not the paroches that separates between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. That paroches would be used, as we'll see later on, not tonight, but we'll see later on in Bamidbar, that was used to envelop the Aron. It was used to envelop the ark when they were ready to travel with it. But this masach, this curtain, is the one for the entrance to the Mishkan itself. So that was also part of the job of the Bnei Gershon. What else? Vikalei hechatzer, the curtains of the courtyard. So far everything is a curtain or a tapestry. That's all they're carrying. Ves masach pesach hechatzer, and also the curtain that was used as the entrance to the courtyard. All these curtains and tapestries. Asher al mishkan v'al mizbeach saviv, that was used to surround the mishkan and the mizbeach. Ve'es meisarav, and its ropes. All of its services. So that which the Bnei Gershon carried were all of these tapestries and curtains. Now, if you think about it, in the hardware of the Mishkan, these tapestries were not light; they were heavy. Mm-hmm. However, they're still not nearly as heavy as the beams. The krushim, which are the beams of the Mishkan, were certainly the heaviest burden to carry. So the Bnei Gershon had a lighter burden. They only carried the tapestries and the curtains. That was their main job to carry. That's going to make a difference, as we'll see. Yeah.
Do they first take the things outside of the Mishkan, or did they take the tapestries off first? What's the order?
So we're going to get a detailed description at the end of Bamidbar for how they dismantled the Mishkan. So we'll see. Putting it up, they put up the Mishkan first, and then they brought in the utensils. But we're going to get a whole picture of it at the end of Bamidbar. Pasuk Chav Zayin, verse 27. What about Kehas? V'li Kehas, Mishpachas HaAmrami, U'mishpachas HaYitzhari, U'mishpachas HaChevroni, U'mishpachas HaAzieli. Those are the four families that we mentioned before, the four sons. Elehem, Mishpachas HaKiasi. These are the families of Kehas. The mispar kol zachar b'menchodesh v'mala, the count of all males 1 month and up, 8,600. That's a little bit more than Gershon. Shomrei mishmeres hakodesh, their job was the sanctified job. They are going to actually carry the utensils of the Mishkan, as we'll see in a moment. Mishpachos b'nei Kehas yachanu, the families of Kehas would camp. Al yerach hamishkan teimana, on the southern side of the Mishkan. That is very, very important, as we will see. That's very, very significant that they were on the south of the Mishkan. Unesive Esav leMishpachos HaKehasi, and who was the Nasi of Kehas? Elitzafan ben Uziel. Now, I just mentioned the previous pasuk was very important. This is like an explosion going off. This pasuk creates incredible ramifications because of this pasuk, that the Nasi of Kehas was Elitzafan ben Uziel. We'll talk about what those ramifications are presently, but for now, let's just point out, Uziel is one of the sons of Kehas. Elitzafan is a grandson of Kehas. Uziel is what number son of Kehas? He had four sons. So Uziel is the fourth son. Amram, Yitzhar, Chevron, Uziel. Uziel's number four. So the fourth son was Elitzafan ben Uziel. I'm sorry, Uziel was the fourth son. Elitzafan ben Uziel is the grandson is of Kehas. This is a very, very important pasuk. Now, Elitzafan ben Uziel has been mentioned before in the Chumash. He was then called Elitzafan, but as you know, sometimes these names have slight differences, which there's a reason for that. We don't always know all the reasons. I certainly don't know all the reasons. But before he was called Elitzafan, he was mentioned. You can hold the place over here on page 740, and you can turn back to Parshas Shmini, page 592. When Aaron's two sons, Nadav and Avihu, tragically are killed in the Mishkan for bringing a foreign fire, whatever that means, we learned about it back then, but now you had two deceased people in the Mishkan. They had to get them out of the Mishkan. So on page 592, Pasuk Dal, verse 4, Vayikra Moshe el Mishael ve'el el Tzafan. Moshe called to Mishael and to El Tzafan, B'nei Uziel, the sons of Uziel, Dod Aharon. Uziel was the uncle of Aharon. When we learned this, we explained why it emphasizes the uncle of Aharon, even though he was also the uncle of Moshe. So that was, that we discussed at that time. So he was the uncle of Aharon. That's Uziel. So these are Aaron's first cousins, Mishael and El-Tzafan. Vayomer Alehem, and Moshe said to them, Kirvu su'es achichem eis p'nei HaKodesh. Come close, carry your brothers, really your first cousins, from your first cousin's sons. First cousins once removed, Nadav and Avihu, from in front of the Kodesh, el mechutz la-machaneh, to out of the machaneh. In the next pasuk, vayikruvu, they came close. Vayisaum bechutanosam, they carried them in their tunics. El mechutz la-machaneh, out of the camp, kasher diber Moshe. So we have Mishael and El Tzafan. So El Tzafan, El Tzafan, same person. That he was given a task by Moshe Rabbeinu. There in Parashas Shemini, no mention is made as to why Moshe chose those two cousins of his to take care of this job. Here we see that El Tzafan ben Uziel is being given a position of authority. Mm-hmm. He's been given a position as the Nasi of Kehas. So evidently, El Tzafan / El Tzafan was a person of stature. He was an important person. Moshe Rabbeinu saw fit to call upon him before, and here Hashem appoints him as the head of Kehas.
And the other, in Shemini though, it says the other brother before him.
Yes.
And then sounds like what happens to that other brother?
Doesn't mention him. It sounds like El Tzafan was the younger brother,
right,
of Uziel, of the younger son of Uziel. That's what it sounds like. Right. That's an important point as well, as we will see. Right. But clearly they were prominent, these sons of Uziel. Pasuk Lamed Aleph, back on page 741. Now what about the jobs of Kehas? Umishmartam, their jobs were Ha'aron, V'ha-shulchan, v'ha-menorah, v'ha-mizbechos. So you have the aron, the shulchan, the menorah, and the two altars. Uchalei ha-kodesh, and the sanctified utensils, asher yishar subahem, that were used to serve. So that would be like the various vessels and the things that were used to move the meat around in the fire. Whatever all the various utensils they had. V'ha-masach, and the masach. The masach also means a covering. V'chol avodaso, and all of its services. So this word masach is confusing because the masach, the we already mentioned under Gershon, back in Pasuk Chavav 26, it says v'kalei chatzer, and then it says masach pesach chatzer. That's the curtain that was the entranceway to the chatzer. And the previous pasuk says umasach pesach ha'amoid, the curtain that was the entranceway to the Mishkan. So what masach do we have left? And masach means a curtain that's used as an entry. So Rashi here tells us this time it means the paroches, because since the paroches was used to cover the aron, since they're going to carry the aron, the masach is going to be their job as the paroches. Pasuk Lamed Beis, verse 32. So we're mentioning a separate Nasi for each of the branches of the Levium. But how about the Nasi that's in charge of the whole operation? Unesi Nesiei HaLevi, who's the Nasi, the leader of the entire tribe of Levi? Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen. It was Elazar. Aaron has two remaining sons, Elazar and Isamar. Elazar will eventually succeed Aaron as the Kohen Gadol. Elazar will be the second Kohen Gadol we ever had. But right now, he's not the Kohen Gadol. His father Aaron is the Kohen Gadol. So Elazar is the leader of Levi. Pikudas Shomrei Mishmeres HaKodesh. So he is in charge of the the sanctified work. Now, we will see later that Isamar also has a job. Elazar and Isamar are Kohanim. We will see that Isamar also is given a position of leadership. And the way it's going to break down is that Elazar is the leader primarily of Kehas, whereas Isamar is the leader of Gershon and Merari, because Kehas is handling the most sanctified parts of the Mishkan. So even though Elazar is in charge of all the Levim, but he specifically focuses on the branch of Kehas. Now, what about the third branch of the Levim? Pasuk Vamigimel, verse 33. Limrari mishpachas ha-machli u-mishpachas ha-mushi. Merari has two families, Machli and Mushi. Elahem mishpachas Merari, these are the families of Merari. Ufkudehem b'mispar kol zachar, and the count of all the males, miben chodesh v'ala, month and up, sheshes alafim u-masayim, 6,200. Unusive Savlu Mishpahos Merari, and who was their Nasi? Tsuriel ben Avichayel. His name was Tsuriel ben Avichayel. Al Yerach Mishkan Yachanut Safona. They dwelled on the north. They camped on the north side of the Mishkan. Ufkudas Mishmeres Bnei Merari. What was the job of Merari? Karshe HaMishkan. There's the beams of the Mishkan, those very heavy, thick boards of the Mishkan. Uvrichav. And its brichim, the brichim were the poles. The boards of the Mishkan stood vertically. The poles went through the boards horizontally to hold them together. Ve'amudav va'adonav. The amudim were poles that held up the paroches and the masach, the entranceway. You had freestanding poles. Adonav were the sockets that the wooden beams were placed in. V'chol kelav, and all of its utensils, v'chol avodaso, and all that was needed to serve it. Also, ve'amudei hachatzer saviv, also the pillars, the beams of the chatzer, of the courtyard all around. Ve'ad nehem, and their sockets. V'seido sam, and their, yaseid means their pegs that would hold the curtains into the ground. U'meis rehem, and their ropes. So the Merari family has very heavy load. Very, very heavy. Now this is going to make a very, very big difference. It will also be useful in answering a very perplexing question, which I don't think we'll get to tonight. But when we get to it, this point will be significant to answer that question, as we will see. V'achonim lifnei ha-mishkan. And those who dwelled in front of the Mishkan, this is on the east side, Kedma on the east, Lifnei Oel Moed Mizracha, in front of the Oel Moed, Moshe V'Aaron Uvanav, that's where Moshe and the Kohanim, Aaron and his sons, they dwelled, Shomri Mishmeres HaMikdash, they protected the Mikdash itself, meaning they ensured the sanctity of the Mishkan, L'Mishmeres Bnei Yisrael, for the guarding of the Bnei Yisrael, V'Azar HaKarev Yumas, and a stranger, meaning a non-Kohen who would get close, would die. Kol pikudei Leviim, all of the count of the Leviim, asher pakad Moshe ve'Aaron api Hashem, lemishpachosam, that Moshe and Aaron counted, according to their families, kol zachar mimen chodesh v'malah, all the males, a month and up, shnayim ve'esrim aleph, 22,000. Now here we have the famous question. This is the... You may be aware of this question. It is a well-known question. Chazal ask it. This is a glaring question, really. This one's better. Let's see. It's a glaring question. Yeah. So we have Gershon. Gershon comes in at 7,500. We have Kehas, comes in at 8,600. And we have Merari, comes in at 6,200. Of course, if you add that up, you get 22,300.
So where's the 300 difference?
What happened to the 300?
It's a glaring question. Yes. The Torah lists it, counts it up, and says 22,000. Obviously, the Torah knows how to count. So what happened to the 300? No. So what we're going to see is that the next thing the Torah is going to do is count the Bechoros. It's going to count the firstborn Jews. And there's going to be, Bechoros is going to be 22,273. That's how many firstborn, the rest of the Jewish people there are. So we're going to take the number of the Levium and exchange the Bechoros for the Levium. But the Torah is going to say there's only 22,000 Levium, so there's going to be a surplus of 273 Bechoros. And the Torah is going to say we're going to have to somehow redeem those 273. So the way Chazal asked the question is, what do you mean there's a surplus? There are more Levium than there are Bechoros. There's actually 27 more Levium than Bechoros. So what is there an extra surplus over here? So Chazal say, because of these 22,300, 300 were also Bechoros. They were themselves Bechoros. And therefore, those 300 had to exchange themselves. They had to take off their Bechor hat and put on their Levi hat. So they were unavailable to exchange for the Bechoros. So at the end, you only have 22,000 Levium that are available to exchange with the Bechoros. But you have 22,273 Bechoros. Well, what do you do with those 273? So when the Torah says there's only 22,000, the Torah is fully aware of the fact that there's 22,300. It means there's only 22,000 available Levium. That's what it means over here when it says 22,000. So when we get to the next point with the Bechoros, which I'm not sure we'll get to tonight or not, but when we get to that, we'll discuss these 273 and what happens with them. But that's why there's 300 omitted from the final count, because they are already accounted for and cannot be used to exchange with the Bechoros. Now, I'm going to erase this. I have to show you the directions with the Mishkan.
It's interesting that this is the first time we have a number that doesn't end in a zero.
Yes, yeah, well, 273, right? That is completely strange. We're going to have more of that when we get to counting the Levium from 30 to 50. But yes, that is true. Now, as we've said before, you have the Mishkan. I'll put it in English. You have the Mishkan. In the middle. And in the various directions, so northeast, south, and west. So what we just said is that Gershon is on the west. And then we said that Kehas is on the south, which I mentioned was very significant. Then we said Merari was on the north. And then on the east was Aaron and his sons and Moshe. So we'll call them Kohanim and Moshe. Okay. We already learned before that of the four digalim, of the four banners, the four camps of the Jewish people, they also were on various sides of the Mishkan. So we know that on the east side was Yehuda. And then on the south side was Reuven. On the west side was Ephraim. And on the north side was Dan. So, Chazal tell us, we know there's an adage, Tov l'tzadik, tov l'shcheino. If it's good for the tzadik, it's good for his neighbor. Oy l'rasha, oy l'shcheino. Woe to the rasha, woe to his neighbor. The primary application of oy l'rasha, oy l'shcheino, woe to the rasha, woe to his neighbor, is with tzara'as. Because if a person lives in a semi-detached house where they share a wall, or an apartment, and they share a wall with the neighbor, and the neighbor is guilty of Lashon Hara or one of the other types of averos for which there is tzaras, and the tzaras afflicts the wall, so then those stones have to be removed from the wall. Well, when those stones are removed from the wall, that person now has a hole in his wall. Well, so does the neighbor. The neighbor on the other side of the wall, who didn't speak any Lashon Hara, wasn't guilty of any of these Averos, also has a hole in his wall. Now there's a hole between the two residences. So that's Oyel Rasha, Oyel Shcheino. Because since he's a neighbor with a Rasha, he got hurt, even though he didn't do anything wrong.
What happens when the people were actually getting rewarded and they took down the wall and there was treasure? Did they get to share it?
That's a good question.
Their mutual wall?
That's a good question. I don't know the answer. That's a good question. Well, who got the treasure? I imagine it was shared, which would obviously benefit both of them. But they didn't always have treasure. That was just one way that it sometimes happened. So that's an application of Oyel Rasha, Oyel Shcheino. But there's also Tov LeTzadik, Tov LeShcheino as well. That if it's good for the tzaddik, it's good for the neighbor. Meaning, if you live next to a tzaddik, even if the person, let's say I'm living next to a tzaddik, and let's say I don't have the same merit I don't deserve the same things that the tzaddik deserves. But because Hashem is going to shower bracha upon the tzaddik, so it's going to kind of spill over into my house too. Mm-hmm. So that's a benefit to live next to a tzaddik. Tov LeTzadik, Tov LeShcheino. Oy LeRasha, Oy LeShcheino. So Chazal apply that here as well, because here we have the Kohanim and Moshe Rabbeinu living on the east side of the Mishkan. Well, that was significant. Moshe, of course, is the one who is the transmitter of Torah. As a result, Chazal tell us, Yehuda and those who were with Yehuda become great Talmidei Chachamim. Who are the ones with Yehuda? Yisachar and Zevulun. Now, this is something people don't realize. It is well known that Yisachar and Zevulun made a pact. And even today, we sometimes call this a Yisachar-Zevulun arrangement, where Zevulun was involved in business and was involved in they were merchants, and they were able to make enough of a living to support their own families and other families, and they provided parnasa for Yisachar, and Yisachar would study Torah, and there was a Yisachar Zevulun relationship, and the wealth of Zevulun was split 50-50 with Yisachar, and the Torah of Yisachar was split 50-50 with Zevulun. That's a classic, pure Yisachar-Zevulun relationship. Today, people do this today. They make relationships like this. Sometimes they even write a contract. But today, it's not done exactly the way it was done then. Because today, the way it's normally done is that somebody agrees to support someone else who is studying Torah, or several people studying Torah. But I've never heard of a case, perhaps it is possible, where they actually split everything 50-50. That's the true Yisachar-Zevulun relationship, is that Zevulun splits all of their wealth 50-50 with Yisachar, while Yisachar splits all the Torah 50-50 with Zevulun. Be that as it may, that was their relationship. Yisachar, the tribe of Yisachar, became great Talmidei Chachamim. And they're the ones who had the skill, the intellectual skill, to set up the Jewish calendar, which, as you know, is very, very complex. Today, we have the record of the 1,000-year calendar, but even working with what we have, it's complex. To actually put together the calendar in the first place without any record is very, very complex, very complicated. And the Yisachar, they were the ones able to do it. But what is not generally known is that the Navi tells us the Zevulun Shevet also became great Talmidei Chachamim. Even though not on the level of Yisachar, but they themselves also became Talmidei Chachamim. And Chazal say why? Because these tribes, and Yehuda as well, lived next to Moshe Rabbeinu. And that rubbed off on them, and they became great Talmidei Chachamim. Yeah.
So you said that Elazar was in charge of really Kohath, but yet you said he's over on the east side instead of being on the south side.
Right, because he wasn't in charge of them while they were encamped. When they were involved in carrying the Mishkan,
which is when the whole thing gets dismantled. Then
but once they're traveling, he's with his father. Okay.
Once they're encamped, he's with his father. When they're traveling, that's when he's overseeing Kehaz. Now, the Reuven is on the south side, and Reuven is a neighbor with Kehaz. Well, Kehaz is a great, it's a great family, and that's where Moshe and Aaron come from, Kehaz. But unfortunately, Kehaz also has one of his sons is, as we mentioned, Yitzhar, and Yitzhar's infamous son is Korach. So Korach is here on the south side. And because Korach's on the south side, if you skip ahead, hold the place over here, let's jump ahead to Parshas Korach. Take a quick look over there. On page 820, Vayikach Korach, and Korach took Ben Yitzhar, Ben Kehaz, Ben Levi, Korach the son of Yitzhar, the son of Kehaz, son of Levi, and who else? Vidasan Vaviram Bnei Eliav, they were the sons of Eliav, Vaon Ben Peles, they were all Bnei Reuven. That Korach's Ada, the group that was with Korach, were primarily from Reuven. The next pasuk says he had 250 men with him. Chazal say, Rubam Mishevet Reuven. Most of the 250 men of Korach were from the tribe of Reuven. So Chazal say, Oy l'Rasha, Oy l'Shcheino. Because Kehaz was in the south, and part of Kehaz was Korach, and his rebellion therefore started in the south, the primary people who joined him were from Reuven. Oy l'Rasha, Oy l'Shcheino. I mentioned that Elitzafan ben Uziel is the Nasi, he is the leader of the branch of Kehaz. He's the leader of the branch of Kehaz. So that creates all kinds of upheaval. And here's why. I'm going to erase this now because we have one more thing we have to put on the board. Now we went through what I'm about to show you back in Parshas Va'era. I don't know how many years ago that was. So I think it's time for a review anyway. Okay. So we have Levi. What's that? We have Levi. Now Levi has, as he mentioned, three sons. We have Gershon. We have Kehaz. And we have Merari. Gershon has two sons. He has Livni and Shim'i. I'm not sure how to spell that exactly. Shimmy, something like that. Okay. Kehaz has four sons.
Amram.
Yitzhar. Chevron. And Uziel. The city of Chevron, by the way, existed already. And then the son Chevron. Hebron and Uziel. I'm sorry, that's not coming out so nicely. Okay. And Merari has two sons. He has Machli and Mushi. Okay, fine. Now, we know Amram has, we're going to only write the men over here, he has Aaron and he has Moshe. Okay. Yitzhar, we know, has Korach. He has others, but he has Korach. Uziel has Mishael and El Tzafon or El Li Tzafon. Okay. So, the Torah tells us that Eli Tzafon ben Uziel is picked to be the Nasi of Kahas. He's the leader of Kahas. This incensed Korach. Why did it incense Korach? Because he said the following. He said, I don't get it. He said, I can concede that Moshe should be the leader of the Jewish people, and that Aaron should be the Kohen Gadol. That makes sense to me. You know why it makes sense to me? Because they are my cousins, the son of the oldest brother. It makes sense. If you come from the oldest brother, that the privileges go to you first. As the Torah often favors the older brother, the Bechor. Amram is the Bechor of Kahas. So, Aaron and Moshe, I get it. But the next appointment, says Korach, there are no more sons of Amram, the next appointment should have gone to the next brother, who is Yitzhar. And I am the son, the eldest son of the next brother, Yitzhar. Therefore, the next appointment should have gone to me. But Moshe Rabbeinu didn't do that. Moshe Rabbeinu jumped to the fourth son and picked the younger, apparently, son of the fourth son, the youngest son, perhaps the youngest cousin, or one of the youngest cousins, and appointed him as the leader of Kahas. Korach reasoned as follows. Until now, I would have believed that Moshe Rabbeinu was acting based on what Hashem wanted, because it makes sense that they should get the first appointments. But now he jumps over me, jumps over the cousins Chevron, even jumps over perhaps Elitzafan's older brother Mishael, and picks the youngest one. That can't be from Hashem. Obviously, Moshe Rabbeinu is playing favorites. This is coming from Moshe. This is not coming from Hashem. And if Moshe made up the appointment of Elitzafan, well then, he very well might have made up the appointment of Aaron as well. And therefore, I am going to mount a rebellion and challenge Moshe Rabbeinu, not only about Elitzafan, but about Aaron as well. Had, in Korach's mind, had this not happened, had Elitzafan not happened, he was willing to accept that Aaron's appointment was divine. But once Moshe Rabbeinu picked Elitzafan as that of Kahas, then he says, can't be. The whole thing is obviously made up. Moshe Rabbeinu is not honest with us. He claims everything is from Hashem. I don't believe him. I believe that he is playing favorites, and therefore he mounted his rebellion. But this is because they had appointment of Elitzafan ben Uziel as the leader of Kahas. Now, of course, Moshe Rabbeinu was acting from Hashem. But this is what incensed Korach. Now, there's more that there were more factors that made Korach believe that Moshe Rabbeinu was wrong and that he was playing favorites. One of which is, as we'll learn when we get to Korach, that Korach has a very illustrious descendant. Anybody know who Korach's descendant is? Shmuel. Korach's descendant, down the line, is Shmuel Hanavi, which the in Tehillim it says that Aaron and Moshe and Shmuel are compared to each other. So Korach knows that he's big stuff. He knows he's got a huge descendant coming from him, and therefore Korach believes that at this level also it is unfair, and not just unfair, it is incorrect, it is disingenuous that Moshe Rabbeinu leapfrogged over him and picked Elitzafan as the leader of Kahas.
But what about, you have that Yosef has a split portion, and he wasn't Reuben. Reuben was the firstborn. And Ephraim and Manasseh, they were given the brachas.
Excellent.
And so why does he think that in this case it's
excellent,
not one of those?
Excellent. Look even at this chart, and you should be able to upschlug. You should be able to
well, because Kahas is not the firstborn.
Yeah. What is he doing here? What on earth is, Kahas? Kahas is the second son. The whole thing doesn't make sense. And not only that, how about Levi?
Not firstborn.
He's number three. So the entire discussion falls flat. Korach is picking a paradigm that simply isn't true. It simply isn't true. There are times where you follow the firstborn. We know the Bechor gets Pishnayim, gets double portion. We also know that in a succession, let's say royalty or whatever it is, that you look at the firstborn first. If the firstborn is fit to succeed, then we follow that if there's no other mitigating circumstances. But the entire paradigm here, Levi's the third son, Kaz is the second son. Who says we're going in the order of...
But maybe because he was by Reuven, and Reuven was the firstborn, he made up this whole argument because he thought that could get them on his side.
That may be true, but Chazal are saying that this was what motivated him in the first place to want to rebel.
Okay.
Then he brought in Reuven. Then you're right, Reuven would have been at fertile ground because he's coming from this question of, hey, doesn't the firstborn, how come Yehuda's the leader? What about you? Right. So that would have been very powerful with Reuven. So here you have... A situation where Korach is focusing on a very narrow part of the lineage and picking a fight. When if he would have looked more broadly, then he would have seen that it doesn't make any sense. So clearly, Korach was himself not seeing things right, and there must have been something pushing him to not see things right. Why did he not see things right? So Chazal tell us Korach was corrupted by his wealth. Korach was the wealthiest man in Klal Yisrael. Which, you know, when we left Egypt, so we had been slaves. But then we picked up a lot of wealth. First, when we left Egypt, we took wealth from the Egyptians. And then, Kriyas Yamsuf, after that, all the wealth they brought with them, we got a lot of wealth from leaving Mitzrayim. But Chazal tell us that Korach was the beneficiary of an even greater wealth. And that is wealth that we learn about in this coming week's Parsha. In this coming week's Parsha, Parshas Vayigash, we are going to learn about an unbelievable amount of transfer of wealth in the known world that goes from Canaan and other places and ends up where?
Egypt.
In Egypt. Egypt becomes not only militarily the most powerful country in the world, but economically. Because of the Rav, because of the famine, a huge amount of wealth migrates into Egypt. Chazal tell us Yosef HaTzadik, Yosef divided the wealth into three huge stashes, and hid them in various places in Egypt. Chazal tell us that Korach stumbled upon one of those stashes and ended up being a very, very, very wealthy man. All the Jews had wealth when we left Egypt. Everybody had something. But Korach was far and above wealthier than everybody else because he came across one of these three stashes of wealth that Yosef had hidden. And Chazal tell us that wealth got to his head. And because of that, Korach was unable to see beyond his immediate, right in front of him. It was very, very hard for him to see beyond that. And it corrupted him. And it made it very, very difficult for him to see anything else. So that and that really was his undoing. But that was because of one of those stashes of wealth that he found. So we're going to learn, of course, we'll learn about Korach. We're in Sefer Bamidbar, so we're going to get to it. Not sure exactly when, in several months from now. We'll get to Korach, and we'll discuss it more in depth. But it's important to note that here in Bamidbar, the seeds are sown for the rebellion of Korach. Even though it seems very innocuous. The Nasi was, Elitzah, the Torah just writes it as if it's no big deal. But when we get to Korach, Rashi will reference these psukim and show us that this is really where the rebellion began. This is where it began to play on Korach's mind. He didn't melt his rebellion this second. It's going to be a little while. But this is already where he's starting to feel, hey, this is not right. What's going on over here? And that ferments within him, and he eventually just explodes, and he has a rebellion. This is where it comes from.
Start with when Nadav and Abihu passed away, and Moshe defined those.
So good. So that's a good question. That's a good question. That then perhaps even over there, but that was not a permanent appointment. That was a one-time job, and it could be that it did bother him.
he probably didn't want to touch the dead.
It could be.
If he's so wealthy and so full of himself, he probably thought that was beneath him anyway.
Could be that's the way he justified it. He said that's a menial task. It could be that's the way of course you pick the youngest cousins for that, because that's like the, you know,
they're strong.
Yeah, right. That's for them. It could be that's the way he, like, you know, he, yeah, in his own head. But this just irked him to no end. How can you put him as the leader? So I mean, this is a, when we learn Korach, we'll see that there's just so much that is important for us to absorb from it. Our own, you know, we have jealousy. We also do, and we, you know, things bother us, and it can really eat away at a person. And even if it doesn't make a person explode at that time, it can happen later. And these things just play on our minds, and we build up in our own minds a whole paradigm that doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. Korach's whole thing is it's a deck of cards. It doesn't exist. But in his own mind, it built up, and he said, it must be Moshe Rabbeinu's a liar. And that was it. So we'll continue with that. So Mizrach Hashem, next week we're going to pick up with here on 742, we're going to pick up with the count of the Bechoros who are going to be exchanged with the Levim. That'll be next week, Mizrach Hashem.
Does it really say in here that Moshe is the one who appointed the leaders?
No, it doesn't say that. But we know that Moshe Rabbeinu is the one telling everybody what Hashem is saying. So you have to trust Moshe Rabbeinu, right? Yeah. Okay. For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.